Hi, this is St. Louis Stan. I'm calling from the city that's my name. I just wanted to bring to your attention something I spotted on WorldNet Daily about a huge bright light that appeared in the sky up and around Norway and the actual blue beam that came out of it. And apparently this light and this beam, according to WorldNet Daily, was out there for like around 10 minutes, and everybody and their uncle could see it, and it was just massive. And I thought I'd drop that line and let you know about that if you guys wanted to check into that. I love your show. I've been listening to you guys since you back way just after you stopped being Myth Arc Radio. Me and a buddy of mine got turned on your show and enjoyed it ever since. You guys do awesome work, and keep it up, and God bless. Bye.
Change has come to America.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
On a beautiful day in the heartland, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Farmer Gilbert. And welcome to the bunker, everybody. We don't have any spirals in our sky so far.
No, in fact, it's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day.
Record this on December 14th of 2009, and we're up over 50 degrees Fahrenheit in the heartland of the United States. Thanks to global warming, we're having a great day.
We are having a wonderful day. You know, interestingly, we started this at 2:22. Did you notice that?
I didn't know that. It wasn't intentional. But since we don't,
since we don't
cotton to that anyway, we're
no,
not going to pay any attention
don't.
To that.
We don't. Well, you know, we opened with a clip from the Skype call that we got from St. Louis Stan, and I think he asks a great question, one that I think almost every listener we have is wondering if we were going to address this weekend. And of course, our show's going up one day. Well, it's hard to say how late it is because we're sort of sporadic as to whether our show goes up on Saturday or Sunday. But it is. We're recording this on Monday, the what did you say, the
14th? 14th, right.
Yeah. Because we had, of course, fumes again in the house. We once again were working on the hallway, and we could not get up the stairs to get up here.
Yeah.
We still have to walk in our sock feet in the hallway, but...
Yeah, until that polyurethane cures completely, yeah. But between not getting upstairs and... the fumes. Well, we were, it just wasn't, a show yesterday just wasn't going to happen. But people in Norway must have been wondering if they were inhaling something when they saw that spiral. And by now, I'm sure listeners
we'll
have
link
seen
the video. You have to watch the video and look at the individual still pictures because a number of people apparently were able to record it in either a still or video format. Mm-hmm. It is the most odd-looking phenomenon in the sky over Norway, which almost to the day coincided with the arrival of Barack Obama to pick up his
Nobel
Peace
Prize. Yeah.
Prize. Yeah. We'll talk about his speech in a few minutes. But that whole thing in the sky was really interesting. And well, let's just go ahead and jump right in because there are a number of questions I have about it. The official explanation – You want to give the official explanation?
Well, the official explanation is that it was a failed Russian ICBM missile test, the 13th failure of this particular missile, mm-hmm. incidentally.
Which failed previously, most previously, in November 1st, mm-hmm. in that same region, there was sort of an odd phenomenon in the sky that was very curious looking, but it looked nothing like what we saw this past week. That the explanation for that one on November 1st was failed Russian missile. Mm-hmm. They're testing what is it called?
The Bulova. Yeah, I remember it because it's, you know, John Cameron Swayze. No, he did the Timex commercials, but Bulova watch time, but it's not
spelled
the same.
Bulova.
No, Bulova. Yeah, the Bulova missile, which is supposed to deliver nuclear warheads to the United States.
Okay, I have a number of questions, and they have nothing to do with how it looked. Let's just take a look at the premise that the Russians were testing this missile.
Mm-hmm.
A, there were no warnings to – my understanding is that they did not tell anybody in the Norway area or NATO, mm-hmm. in fact, that they were going to be testing this missile. So it was under the radar, so to speak. Two, why test a missile that has already failed 12 times in front of the what is essentially the world coming together in that region? Because
that's
a good point. Copenhagen summit and Obama and the other Nobel laureates, I mean, a lot was going on within that very tiny region, a very tight area of the world. Mm-hmm. The world leadership was essentially there. And we're talking about NATO as well. So why would Russia, you know, if you want to do anything, you want to appear to be flexing your muscles, not, you know, failing. So why test a failing missile at
that time? I don't know. I can only assume that the Russians didn't think it was going to fail. I mean, now presenting, a skeptic's, explanation for this, not that I am a skeptic, but just, here are the explanations that would likely be floated, mm-hmm. That the Russians didn't think it was going to fail. They tested it in a remote region, the claim anyway, of the White Sea, which mm-hmm. is
right.
north of Russian territory and in a very remote area that would not be perceived as a threat. Certainly, since this was a submarine-launched missile, certainly not mm-hmm. as if they were launching this out in the Pacific or the Atlantic Ocean someplace, which would be, I think, received completely differently, you would think anyway.
With the exception that if you take a look at, there are some forums that have worked out, and I'm not going to tell you which forums they are, but because I'm not sure exactly who figured it out first.
Mm-hmm.
So I hate to give credit unless I know for sure that that person is the one. But a number of people have figured out, based on the topography and the various pictures, pretty much what landmass we're looking at in the photographs and in the videos. And from that, they've sort of figured out the point of origin if it had been a missile. The theories going out as of yesterday were if these calculations have merit, that so-called missile may have overflown at least two NATO countries.
Oh, well, that's a little different then, isn't it?
Yes, it is, which is, again, gets back to officially, nobody seemed to know what was going to happen. We've got a major gathering of NATO countries in the area. At the very least, why is there no outcry? How mm-hmm. dare Russia do this?
Well, unless, again, the flight path that the missile took was not the one that was planned, which would be expected if this was, in fact, a failed missile.
Right.
Now, I posted to PID News a video that was produced that I found it at, I think, gizmodo.com that presented a modeled animation showing how an out-of-control rocket that's spewing fuel while it spirals helplessly out of control mm-hmm. could create that kind of a look, kind of a corkscrew, mm-hmm. which when viewed from straight on would appear to be a spiral instead of a corkscrew up in the sky.
Right.
And then once the fuel stopped, once this fuel was spent, then it would appear that a black circle would emit from the middle mm-hmm. as the fuel that had been spewed out continued to expand.
Right.
And I suppose that's plausible, but, animations were used to explain TWA Flight 800 as well, which violated the laws of physics.
So your video
physics.
Is an animation?
The video is an animation.
Oh,
it was not
well,
a video.
I'm sorry, but discount that as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean,
I can animate anything.
Sure. I mean, it at least appears to be more plausible than the Flight 800 animation produced by the CIA. But still, I'm not sold that this was, in fact, a failed Russian missile. Because you're right, there's been a real silence from the nations bordering Russia. You'd think that the Baltic states, Norway, Finland, Sweden would have something to say about it.
Yeah.
And NATO, certainly. But we've not seen any kind of a response other than just the admission by Russia that,
And at first they said, no, we didn't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me just continue. There is also available on YouTube, and we can link to this. It's a Chinese video in Chinese with mm-hmm. Chinese subtitles.
Well, they're so different dialects over there.
No idea what it says, but the imagery is of something that took place at a different time. I think it's either earlier this year or possibly even.
Oh,
in the
I know the one you're talking about.
Years.
Actually, it was.
And it looks very similar.
Right. And it was supposedly a failed Chinese rocket.
Right. Now, let me tell you what I think is a possibility. I'm not a physicist, I don't even pretend to be one. I don't ever want to be one. But I have a wonderful imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And my imagination says, what if this is not a video of a failed missile, but a video of a successful missile shoot down?
Well, that's an interesting thought.
In other words, these 13 failures,
mm-hmm.
what if Russia hasn't failed 13 times, but succeeded 13 times?
In other words, fired a missile and then tested an anti-missile laser
Some
or something
kind
to that
plasma
effect?
Plasma weapon or laser weapon or something like that.
Interesting thought.
I know the Chinese have been working on anti-satellite technology that
right.
will shoot down satellites. So you can bet that they're working on anti-missile technology. And it probably falls into the realm of almost science fiction because there mm-hmm. are guns to shoot those things down. There are anti-missiles to shoot those things down. But what we haven't officially heard about that I know of are, you know, sort of Star Trek-style weapons, ray guns, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
that may leave a very odd fingerprint in the sky.
Or perhaps the damaged missile leaving mm-hmm. that odd fingerprint mm-hmm. in the sky. Sure, that's an interesting speculation. And maybe that's why we've not heard more about it from NATO or from Western nations.
That's just it. It could be that we're not going to out them, so to speak, because we're doing the same thing.
Huh. Or because we don't want to admit that we know what we know.
You know that you know that I know that you.
Yes. Did you know that?
Let's not forget, though, that earlier this year, the Obama administration came out and said, okay, as far as fireballs and things that come from the sky that we track governmentally, mm-hmm. forget it. You don't get to know anymore.
Yeah, that information is no longer available
to amateur
scientists. Right, yeah. Which is kind of an interesting thing. I mean, mm-hmm. excuse me, but how is that a matter of national security?
Exactly, particularly when we've had a number of close calls with relatively small
near-Earth objects
that have, in fact, a couple of them have supposedly have come into the atmosphere over the last couple of months. So, you know, we may be entering a section of space that has a little more debris in it.
Mm.
We're getting really close to that witching hour, so to speak, when everything lines up at midnight with the galactic center. And in fact, you just had a big conversation with Chris White about all
Well, a couple of, yeah, actually, Chris White talked about the 2012 deception, and that'll be the View from the Bunker interview coming up next weekend, which follows the 2012 discussion with Tom Horn that just went up today mm-hmm. about his new book, Apollyon Rising 2012.
Just three years away.
Religions, the esoteric groups, the secret societies, many of them, I should say, are pointing to 2012 as a significant date for some reason. We've had conversations with David Flynn about this, you know, the occult signature of the Roswell crash and how, the location, the time, the date, all of that seems to point to 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they pointing to 2012? What is going to take place on that date? Well, you know, Chris basically goes through the arguments that are being presented by the 12ers.
2012ers.
2012ers.
We'll
yeah,
call no, not 2012ers.
Yeah, the
12ers
are the,
that's the 12th Imam
yeah,
thing.
Right. But yeah, I figure why not? I mean, they call people asking about Barack Obama's birth certificate birthers, and people who question the official 9/11 story truthers. 2012ers. The 2012ers are presenting a story.
Patent pending.
trademark pending. And the question is, why are they doing it? Who benefits from this deception? And what evidence do they present? Why is it wrong? And he points out that we're not going to line up with the Galactic Center in 2012. What we will see from Earth's unique perspective in the galaxy is that the sun will rise from the mouth of the Ouroboros
mm-hmm.
on the winter solstice in 2012.
Right, so-called dark rift.
Right, but as far as our location relative to the Galactic Center, that's not going to take place. We won't be in the plane of the ecliptic for another 30 million years, so that's not going to happen.
I don't think I'll be here then.
I'm not planning on being here, and I'll be off here long before then. So anyway, that's an interesting discussion, and he's got a lot of information about that at his website, the2012deception.net. We talked with Dave Duncan about this a couple of years back, and his New World Order scam even ties into this. It all comes back to a New Age belief that Christians are holding back the Earth and holding back the world's population from shifting into a new plane of consciousness or transforming into a new species or some such thing. But the interesting thing is this was all supposed to take place on May 5th of 2000 when mm-hmm. we had that planetary alignment. And when it didn't happen, they suddenly shifted gears. Like, oh, wait, we meant 2012. Well,
it could be that nothing will happen on December 21st of 2012.
Right.
But it could be that something huge will happen
mm-hmm.
within the realm of the enemy camp.
Exactly. To use a baseball analogy that we've used before, it's like Satan always has a relief pitcher warming up in the bullpen. And if this one doesn't pan out, he brings in a new relief pitcher. Okay, we meant 2016, because the Mayans were talking about blocks of 20 years instead of 19.7. And if that doesn't work out, then it'll be something else. So there will always be something there for those who don't have eyes to see and ears to hear the truth.
Well, I think what is really, really interesting is how you've got the Discovery Channel, History Channel, you name the channel within a whole group of
National Geographic.
It's a whole cluster of channels that a lot of parents, frankly, think, hey, let's just put it on this channel because it's
educational.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah.
And what are they showing? They're showing Nostradamus, UFOs,
yep.
the Hitler stuff. And usually the Hitler stuff has to do with his search for, extraterrestrials mm-hmm. and
the
Hollow Earth theory.
The Hollow Earth, right, the Spear of Destiny. He brought the temple, the seat of Zeus that was at the temple at Pergamum mm-hmm. back to Berlin, which was mentioned in the Bible.
In the book of Revelation?
In the book of Revelation, when Jesus had John write the letter to the church at Pergamum.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the place where Satan dwells.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the temple of Zeus. And that seat, that giant seat, the altar, essentially, well, not the seat, but the altar, was brought back to Berlin by Adolf Hitler.
Well, and there's an argument that, you're about to say it.
Well, one of the things that Tom Horn talked about is the 17 letter, 17, a reference to Osiris, on the back of the Great Seal of the United States, Novus Ordo Seclorum, is from that poem by the Roman poet Virgil, which prophesies the return of Saturn's reign, which Saturn is just another manifestation of Satan,
mm-hmm.
through the birth of a boy, Apollo, Apollyon, Abaddon, Osiris, Marduk, Nimrod. Mm-hmm. Again, they're all essentially the same deity, and that gets back to the discussion with Tom Horn that was just posted about what that means and whether men as brilliant as Washington, Jefferson, Adams, Franklin didn't know anything about this when the Great Seal was being devised for the United States. Of course they did.
Or
at least some of them did. But that's the whole point of, it fits into this grand deception that's being laid out for the next 3+ years.
I have to bring up something that you noticed yesterday. We were watching, and this is connected, believe it or not. We were watching, I don't even know what channel it was, but Oh Brother, Where Art Thou started to come on, which is one of our favorite movies. There, my sister has a phrase called comfort movies, and it's true. There are certain uh-huh. movies that you put on and you do other things because that's a comfortable thing to have on in the background. You don't have to watch it constantly. And I think that's one of the reasons that is at WTBS or TBS rather, that runs A Christmas Story all
right, uh-huh.
day long. Well, it's a comfort movie. Well, this movie came on, and you and I were sitting there and watching the credits roll by.
Yeah, the opening titles.
The opening titles, where it's almost like a silent movie screen,
mm-hmm.
and you see the titles within a framework. You noticed. I hadn't noticed it before.
Well, I'd never noticed it either, but the opening titles had at each corner – there was a border around, the opening titles, starring George uh-huh. Clooney or whatever. And on each of the title, there were four little symbols in each corner.
One was a cross.
And I noticed one was a cross, a Star of David. One was a trowel.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was something else, which I forget. But
I think it looked like a piece of pie.
It looked like a piece of pie or something. I've got to go back and review it because it went by quickly. But then as
they did, but each one was different.
Right. But that one in particular I noticed when I went back to reading Apollyon Rising 2012, Tom Horn's book, I noticed on a picture of the first level Freemasons tracing board, which is a memory tool to help first-level Freemasons understand the symbolism that they're being indoctrinated with, that these symbols, the cross, the Star of David, the trowel, were all on that first level tracing board. And I can't remember the fourth symbol. So now I've got to go back and check that to see if it was there. And I've got to find our copy of the movie, watch the DVD, and you know, frame by frame it so that we can go back and check those symbols.
It was just so interesting when you said that. And I thought, oh my gosh, maybe there's a level to this film that we weren't aware of.
Sure.
Because the whole film is about finding salvation.
Right, right.
And we always assumed it was from a Christian point of view, but what if it's not? What if it's from a works-based sort of pyramid point of view?
Right. And I think you can make a strong case that O Brother, Where Art Thou does present a Christian message of salvation, because it's only when George Clooney's character, Ulysses Everett McGill, gets down on his knees and said, Lord, I've been guilty of pride and sharp dealing and turning my back on you, and I ask your forgiveness. I just want to see my family again, please. And then suddenly the dam that they'd bust upstream from his house, which is to be flooded to make this new lake, washes in, and suddenly, you know, the
almost like the flood of Noah. That's what takes away
the flood
the
of
demonic
Noah
presence of the guy with no eyes.
Played by the sheriff. The law is a human institution. Yeah. Well, it is. The law convicts us of our unrighteousness. But then through the repentance and then this baptism, he comes up and they are, you know, they have attained their salvation, which was foretold by the blind seer that they encounter early in the movie, the guy on the railroad track with that hand operated cart on the railroad tracks.
You seek a treasure, but you will not find the treasure that you seek.
Though your hearts grow weary. wonderful movie, wonderful movie. But again, I just noticed those symbols and then happened upon them in the Freemasonic tracing board. Like,
and we bring this up because with regard to 2012 and many other issues that I think, honestly, many of them come from – Sam is making all kinds of noises.
I think he's dreaming in there.
He's growling underneath his blanket at something.
The blanket is quivering like jello, like he's running after something in his sleep.
I think he is having a dream. I wish you could see it. I really wish you could see it. We talk about so many things that are memes, that are repeated ideas that are trying to program the way we think within television and radio and news even, and film, of course, and books, that one of them, of course, is this notion of attaining your salvation through works, which is not Christian-based.
No. But interestingly, it's shared between the New Age movement, which teaches that we can, that we will transform the earth through our works, through enlightenment into a heaven on earth. But it's also
dominionism.
Right,
exactly.
Right, exactly. And this is where you really run the risk of offending a lot of Christians who follow prominent evangelicals like, Pat Robertson, Rick Warren, who are preaching, Chuck Colson and the whole Manhattan Declaration group, who are preaching a political solution to spiritual problems. And in the case of Colson and Warren, who are willing to be ecumenical to do it and to declare brotherhood with those who don't accept that salvation is through faith alone, by grace alone, through faith alone in Jesus Christ alone, in order to achieve these political ends. Well, we need to join hands with our Muslim and Jewish and Roman Catholic brothers, Hindu, whatever, as long as they're willing to agree with us on these key political issues, that abortion is wrong, that same-sex marriage is wrong, and so on. And again, those are spiritual problems. Legal political answers are not, in other words, carnal solutions are not the proper response to those spiritual problems. And that is where we see the overlap between the New Age, and evangelical Christianity. And further, sadly, this kind of segues into one of the things I wanted to talk about. is going even farther than that. Rick Warren has got a conference coming up next month at his Saddleback Church called Radicalis.
Radicalis?
Radicalis. R-A-D-I-C-A-L-I-S. Radicalis.
Why is it named Radicalis?
Well, apparently it's a radical new approach to ministering to congregations. It's a way for Warren to bring pastors together to learn new techniques, I guess, to teach their congregations. But one of the speakers who is going to be presented at the February conference is a guy named Peter Scazzero, S-C-A-Z-Z-E-R-O. Scazzero is a co-founder with his wife of a group called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, which is a ministry that integrates emotional health, whatever that means, and contemplative spirituality. Now, contemplative,
that sounds like Oprah.
Yes, contemplative spirituality is very Eastern. It's essentially empty your mind, you know, get in touch with.
Oh no, that's dangerous.
Contemplative prayer, contemplative centering prayer, it essentially is meditation that is intended to bring on an altered state of consciousness, which is essentially opening yourself to the spirit world, which God makes very clear in the Bible is a dangerous practice. Again, we're talking infants with power tools.
No.
Dangerous.
Now you see a concept of meditation and prayer in Scripture,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't imply that we're supposed to, nor does it teach in any way that I know of, that you're supposed to empty yourself.
Right. No.
And just wait for something to fill you. No, what you do is you take a specific Scripture and you pray to the Lord about it. Can you, you know, and you ask the Holy Spirit to help to guide you to understand it as how it fits in with all other Scripture. And you think about, you really just, and I do this every once in a while. It's amazing mm-hmm. what the Lord can teach you about just a section of His Word. But to empty yourself, that is really dangerous.
Well, yeah, and that's the kind of stuff you get into with, again, Eastern practices, you know, yoga and meditation and transcendental meditation, which, interestingly enough, when I went through the adult classes to become a Roman Catholic, which I did when I was previously married, the priest who conducted these classes taught us, you know, said that, you know, meditation of the Eastern type, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, with a word like, you know, Om or whatever, was not inconsistent with Roman Catholic doctrine. Now, I don't know that he was accurate in presenting that as part of actual mm-hmm. catechism, Roman catechism doctrine, but he was teaching it anyway within his parish, that meditation of the Eastern sort, contemplative meditation, was okay, was encouraged. It was a good spiritual practice for getting in touch with the Lord. Which Lord? You know, Baal translates also means Lord.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So, and this is being promoted by Rick Warren, and Scazzero openly promotes this contemplative spirituality. He also talks about how he takes an annual retreat, an annual retreat with Trappist monks. The Trappist monks are, you know, Benedictine. They discourage, speech unless it's absolutely necessary. It's Roman Catholic order founded by, I did just a very basic reading on it. I mean, the bottom line is that it's not biblically based, and that the Trappist monks have grown in popularity here in recent years due to the writings of a man named Thomas Merton, who was sort of a mystic, born in Kentucky, but, you know, made a lot of trips to the Far East to talk with people like the Dalai Lama, you know, and encourage ecumenical.
It wasn't Asheville, Kentucky, was it?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know, but that the monastery that he was at was in Kentucky, Thomas Merton. So bottom line is that these esoteric religious practices coming out of Roman Catholicism are being incorporated into what Rick Warren, America's leading evangelical pastor, a member of the Southern Baptist Convention, is bringing into his church and through his purpose-driven ministry is then disseminating to thousands of churches across the United States. And most of us are so blinded to good, solid Christian doctrine that we don't notice what's happening here.
Well, there's a wonderful parable that while the owner of the farm is asleep, and we're not, and bear in mind that we are the stewards of the Lord's kingdom. So while the church is sleeping, the enemy is sowing tares all over the place, and they look just like the real thing. It looks just like the real seed, the real word of God. But only as these things mature and grow, and we're seeing that they're maturing now. I think that my prayer is that many believers are starting to wake up to, you know, what appeared to be a good thing and a wonderful growth of the church at first, that it really is false doctrine that has taken deep root within the church.
Well, I don't know. My belief is that most of us who profess to be Christians in the United States anyway, don't have a firm enough grasp of the basics of Christianity. I mean, just the very rock solid core, non-negotiable points of Christian faith, that we don't see that mixing and matching religious practices from other faiths as harmful in any way, much less picking up on these messages when they're fed to us through popular culture. The Pew Research Forum just published a study within the last couple of weeks, and this was posted to PIDnews.com, that more and more Americans are mixing and matching religious practices. That 37% of adults say they attend church in only one place, but 35% say that they attend multiple places. 24% say that they're attending churches in different faiths. So
sometimes that's because one spouse is going to one faith and the other, they take turns. I've known couples like that.
Sure, but...
And that makes it really tough. I think ultimately the best solution is to find common, you know, let's both go to this one place. And that needs to be worked out before you ever get married.
Well, it does. It does. Because, again, if you don't understand the importance of doctrine, then these things don't present any obstacle to you. I mean, because you're just not even thinking about it. But according to this Pew study that, percentage of American adults who've been in touch with the dead, okay, 29% of all adults in the United States claim that they have at some point been in contact with a dead relative, family member, or someone else who has died. Guess what the percentage of American Christians is who claim to have been in touch with the dead? 29%. No difference from the rest of the culture.
Ooh, that's bad.
18% of all American adults say they've had a ghostly encounter. 17% of Christians. 15% of all American adults say that they've consulted a psychic. Percentage of Christians who say they've consulted a psychic? 14%.
That's the one that really bothers me because, frankly, I've seen what would be classified as a ghost. It doesn't mean that I believe that that's, you know, a dead person come back for life. I believe that sometimes we are, for whatever reason, we interact with the what we normally not see, but this seeking out, you know, a psychic, that's bad.
Further, 23% of American Christian adults say they believe in spiritual energy in trees and so forth.
Oh, that's really bad.
23% believe in astrology, compared to 25% for all American adults. 22% believe in reincarnation. 21% believe in yoga as a spiritual practice. This is American Christians now.
These are groups. How did they determine that these people are Christians?
Well, people who self-describe as Christians, right.
Okay, well, that's a pretty
I know.
Group.
It is a diverse group, and somebody who says that they're a Christian may actually believe that he or she's a Christian without really understanding what it means. And that's the whole point here, is that you can't be a Christian and at the same time claim to believe that there's spiritual energy in trees. The Bible is very clear on that point. You can't confuse the creation with the creature with the creator. And you know, Paul is very explicit in that. You know, you can't make that mistake and still call yourself a believer in Jesus Christ. So anyway, this is a study that I'll link to in the show notes at PIDradio.com. But the point is, and this is, you know, just one in a long line of study, George Barna of the Barna Research Group, who focuses on just researching Christian beliefs, you know, among American Christians, has come out with similar studies that, you know, barely more than half of the pastors coming out of seminary today believe, have a biblical worldview described as believing that Jesus was literally God in the flesh, born of a virgin, mm-hmm. died on the cross for the remission of our sins. So I guess it's not too surprising when 49% of pastors come out without a biblical worldview that, you know, you get this many Christians out there, self-professing Christians, who still believe in astrology. So,
well, I'm going to lead you in a total left turn.
All right.
Let's get back to Obama and his speech in Copenhagen.
Yes. I mean, in Oslo.
Because we could, frankly, we could talk about the deterioration of the church for years.
Mm-hmm. We could make it the focus of every show from now on.
We could indeed, but I'm not sure. I think at some point it becomes no longer instructive and it just becomes you,
ranting.
You and I ranting. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, we'll put the Santa Muerte story off to the side. Yeah.
He gave a speech in Oslo, which has been hailed, strangely enough, by Bush people. People who worked for the Bush administration. And in fact, Karl Rove came out and said, I wasn't aware that President Obama had was using President Bush's speech writers.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you voted for change, hope, and all of that good stuff.
Peace in our time.
Give it up, because there is no change. There is no hope in what he promised, because he is just as much a hawk as anybody else. That was not a Nobel Peace Prize. That it was a Nobel War Prize speech.
Yeah. He is, if the progressives who voted for Barack Obama expecting him to bring our troops home and bring peace to the world, if the Nobel Committee thought that he was planning to bring peace to the world, truly thought that, they weren't paying attention to his speeches before the election. Oh, he's only saying that to get elected. We know it. No. The truth is that he has been talking a pretty tough game ever since the campaign started. It's just the only difference between him and John McCain, apparently, was the, we've said before, the time zone in which they planned to deploy the American military.
Mm-hmm.
McCain wanted to finish the job in Iraq. Obama has been saying all along that the war needs to be taken to Afghanistan and possibly Pakistan or Pakistan and Iran, if Iran keeps making noises about getting nukes. You know, it's a lost, you know, Afghanistan is a lost cause. Afghanistan is a place where the British Empire couldn't bring it to its knees. Russia, with twice as many troops and, you know, 10 years and a far more brutal approach than the rules of engagement our soldiers are limited to, couldn't bring Afghanistan to its knees. So there's no reason to expect that our troops, who have to Mirandize the enemy on the battlefield,
mm-hmm.
are going to be able to subdue the nation. Secondly, it appears that, as we've said all along, the true purpose of being in Afghanistan is not now and never has been, or perhaps hasn't been since shortly after we got there, to get Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
It's to secure the country for pipelines.
I really think that's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Now, there may be, spiritually speaking, there may be other reasons for being there, and we touched on that during last week's show
mm-hmm.
when we were talking about Eric Prince and the whole Templar signing and this and that.
Right.
And we sort of intimated that there may be spiritual reasons. I think that there probably are very strong spiritual reasons that have to do with putting together the old Assyrian Empire just before the return of Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Setting it up for mm-hmm. the one world leader. Which brings me back to Barack Obama, who was standing in Oslo accepting a prize for peace.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly the man of sin, when he comes in, is going to be winning the world with peace and putting together a great peace plan and this and that. He's standing there really talking about war, accepting a prize for peace, as this heavenly sign is hanging over Norway. It was the oddest conjunction of news items.
Yeah. And now please understand that we don't, we are not into astrology.
No, I'm not naming him as an antichrist.
Nor are we naming him as an antichrist. No.
No.
But God
says there will be signs in the heavens.
Right.
And, you know, that he set the heavens out there to be for signs and seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no doubt that there are signs in the heavens. But the signs don't always, they are, all things are allowed by God. but they don't always come from God directly. Even the enemy, you know, if his plans include doing something that, you know, like, say, putting a sign in the sky, he's got to get permission for that.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things that we're seeing lead up to the very culmination of history, and that is the reentry of Christ into our dimension, if you want to say that, the return mm-hmm. of Jesus Christ. And, of course, I've said it before. I'll say it again, and I probably get emails again. I am pre-trib. I really do believe that Christ is going to rapture his church. And I don't say that because I want to get out of here. I just believe that logically, taking scripture in its entirety, mm-hmm. that is what we're taught.
Yeah.
That's just it.
That's where the evidence leads.
Right. But that aside, this whole notion that he was standing there talking about war
mm-hmm.
and essentially saying, if you want peace, it means you have to wage war.
Yeah.
Because he kept talking about a just peace. That was his phrase.
Right.
The only way to have a just peace is to make war.
And this gets back to a point about the use of the American military. It appears that the U.S. military is now not just for, well, killing people and breaking things in defense of the United States people. It is essentially deployed as a global police force to keep the peace in the rough neighborhoods of the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, he made that point. He essentially said to Europe, you know, you've had a wonderful decades of peace, but it's only because of American blood that has been spilt on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have this peace if Americans, the Pax Americana, hadn't come in and given it to you.
Mm-hmm. And so we've got neocon shills in talk radio and cable news who bristle when you use the word empire and United States in the same sentence. But the fact is, we've got troops in, what, 39, 40 different nations, something like that,
mm-hmm.
Spanning a territory that Alexander the Great would have been envious of. And we've been in some of these places since World War II, some longer. And you have to say, you just have to say, you know, if this isn't an empire, then what is? If this isn't an empire, then what is? I mean, the only thing we're lacking is an official office in the government called emperor. That's
that'll
the only
the
thing
czar.
That's missing. Yeah, that, right. That'll be a new czar. So the war party is essentially in control of the Republicans, Democrats. Those are just the two subgroups of the war party that mm-hmm. essentially controls American foreign policy and domestic policy, apparently, because it's all geared to one thing, which is just playing this global game of chess. They may see it as for geopolitical reasons, but I think it makes a lot more sense when we look at the spiritual components involved, and that you're right. There may be an attempt here to reassemble the old Assyrian Empire.
Oh, I think so.
Because the you know, there are prophecies of the Assyrian who lead the forces of the world in a devastating final battle against Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So,
speaking of the Battle of Israel and getting to Iran, because that's certainly in the news all the time lately. You and I have spoken that the ultimate goal with Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq has been to get Iran, and that has to do with pipelines and many other, you know, frankly, military-industrial goals that are taking place in the Middle East. But a recent news item is that I'm trying to remember the exact way it went. Iran sent an envoy to Syria. There was a big meeting in Syria regarding the current peace initiative between Israel and Syria, which is, of course, is it Hamas that Syria is behind in
Hezbollah. Well, that's more of
anyway, essentially, Israel's just going directly to Syria and trying to work out a peace deal. And the King of Jordan has been buffering part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Iran sent an envoy to some of the meetings just last week. And the envoy said that Iran believes Israel's going to strike them within the month.
Hmm.
And the reason they brought it up is, you know, if Israel hits us, if the Tattaglia hits us, we want to know, Don Corleone, if you're going to come and you're going to hit them back on our behalf. That's essentially what was going on. Iran wanted to know, if Israel hits Iran, will Syria hit Israel?
Hmm.
And I don't know if they got a yes response or not, but that was the deal.
Yeah. It's
remember the prophecy of Damascus?
Yeah, yeah. Which we worked into the Laodicea Chronicles novel.
Yeah, we just Damascus had an earthquake hit it, yeah. But it could be that if Syria says, sure, we'll do that, that strike, that there could be, you know, be a multiple strike. We'll take out Damascus and Iran at the same time.
Well, it... one way or the other, Damascus is going to be toast at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm. And because God said it, therefore it will happen.
Right. And it would be very interesting, although I don't believe this is the reason, but it would be interesting if it came out that the reason that Assad is hesitating in his response to Iran is because they've read the prophecies. And they don't want it to happen any sooner than necessary.
You know, I bet somebody has. Surely. I mean, Hitler had his people reading all sorts of biblical prophecies, trying to figure out how he fit in, and could he,
exploit it?
Exploit it. Yeah. You got the right. I've got to ask you a question. I'm looking at the RSS feed of PIDnews.com, and I just want to say I'm so thrilled with our new contributors that we've got PID contributors.
Oh, yeah.
That are really expanding the source material there. So kudos to everybody. There's a story that I hadn't even noticed until now, and I'm curious to know if you've read it. Entrance to Underworld Found Beneath Egyptian Pyramids.
Well, you know, that was just the story that I was pulling up over here that while you were talking, because I wanted to, you know, touch on that. And this was from our old friend Foster.
Are we good or what?
Yeah. Von Glitschka posted this one, and it is it relates to a story published recently by British author Andrew Collins, who's sort of a cryptogeologist, crypto historian type researcher and writer. And he, in fact, the picture here, which I don't know if you can see from the angle you're at.
I haven't gone to the story yet. Let me go there.
Is a picture of Collins in a huge cave, which has been discovered beneath the pyramid complex on the plateau at Giza. And Collins believes that this is what is described as the entrance to the underworld in Egyptian funerary texts. So in other words, this is, he believes, the portal, what the Egyptians believed was the portal to the underworld.
That's
where
really
Osiris,
I'm looking at it right now,
yeah,
exactly.
Where Osiris reigned, because Osiris was the king of the underworld, which is why he's always portrayed as, you know, having green skin. Because he's dead. Contrary to the skeptics who, you know, say that he was the archetype of the dying and rising god, it's like, no, Osiris is the dead god. He stays dead. So Collins is, arguing that this is this underground portal. Zahi Hawass, who is the head of the Egyptian Department of Antiquities, I'm not sure has even admitted that this is there. Now, according to the article, Dr. Hawass has gotten involved in the research here, which is lending some credibility to the find. Although Hawass is, if I understand his personality correctly from what I've read about him, he's reluctant to credit others with, you know, especially non-Egyptians, with finds of importance inside Egypt. If he doesn't discover it and announce it, it doesn't really count.
That's the impression I've got from him as well, and also that he doesn't like any theory that attributes any of the tombs or any of the structures found to anyone other than Egyptians.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, and here's Hawass's response to Collins' announcement. There are no new discoveries to be made at Giza. We know everything about the plateau. End quote. So,
well, that's really curious, but because wasn't it Peter Goodgame who talked about the discovery of Osiris's tomb, and then it was very, very quickly hushed up?
Right. Yes, and we've not heard much of anything else about it. And of course, if you read the Stargate conspiracy, which was written by non-Christians, their belief is that Zahi Hawass, who was I've got to do more research in it before I open my mouth and give inaccurate information. But if I understand correctly, that his education, I think, was sponsored by or at least partially paid for by the Edgar Cayce Foundation.
I think you're right.
So, and Cayce, now I've not studied or looked into his works, but he had some prophecies that he
prophesied that a chamber would be found underneath the Sphinx's, I think he said the front paw, but one of the paws.
Okay.
And that all of these ancient records would be found.
Okay. Well,
and it would be in the very last days that that would occur.
So the authors of the Stargate conspiracy, whose names escape me, argued that Hawass was aware of something, or at least had been was connected to people who believed that something was to be found under the plateau. And then Peter Goodgame, in his Giza Discovery, which is a book-length online paper. Can you call it paper when it's all online and electronic? Anyway, it's available at his website, redmoonrising.com, goes into the discovery, what it might mean, and why it plays into the prophecies of the return of Osiris, which brings us back around to Tom Horn and Apollyon Rising 2012, which draws on Peter Goodgame's research, also some of your research, by the way, points to also, you know, looking at an analysis of the occult symbolism built into the Great Seal of a prophesied return of Osiris, aka Apollo, aka Nimrod.
Now, just so you're clear, if you've just recently started to listen to PID radio, the PID stands for Peering into Darkness,
yes.
Which means that we're sort of we consider ourselves sort of spies behind the lines.
Mm-hmm.
We want to know what the enemy is thinking. And by studying the things that the enemy is preaching and that the enemy is teaching, it helps us to understand as believers how better to teach the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you need to understand, spot a fake,
mm-hmm.
First of all, you need to know exactly what the true ones look like, and then you need to understand the fakes as well.
Mm-hmm.
If someone comes, here's an example. I don't believe in evolution, but it's taught in every school.
Right.
And I know that there are many Christians that say we shouldn't allow our children to be taught evolution. I don't agree with that. I say let that child learn that evolution theory better than anybody else in the class. And that way, when that child as a Christian is asked, why don't you believe in evolution? You must be stupid. You've never even looked at it. That person can say, no, let me tell you, and actually show every flaw in it, because that Christian believer knows that theory so well.
Right. A lot of skeptics who point to Christians and say, well, they're just all mind-controlled idiots.
Mm-hmm.
And we've run into a few of those. They've lost the game before they even begun, because if they want to make that argument and try to make it stick, then they've got to find a way to explain all of the brilliantly educated and brilliant minds throughout the centuries that have come to the conclusion, based on the evidence, that the truth claims of Christianity are true. But you're right. If you don't know what the genuine article looks like and how to identify it, it's like teaching a cashier at a store how to spot a counterfeit bill by only showing them counterfeit bills.
Right. You can't learn that way. You have to understand the real bill first.
Right. This is what a real one looks like. Now, these are the fakes that you may be presented with, mm-hmm. and here's why they're fakes. And that's what we try to do with the research that we're doing into these, esoteric beliefs. We're not dabbling in it. We're not soaking in it or anything like that. We're trying to understand what it is that they're putting out there, so that we can recognize the fraud when it comes forward. Sadly, I was listening to an interview with Lynn Marzulli on another podcast the other day, one of the other podcasts on the Revelations Radio Network. One of the things that really grieves him, because he really feels called to talk about how ufology and the UFO phenomenon is going to be used as part of this coming great deception,
mm-hmm.
That the church, as in general, avoids the topic altogether. And how do you address this? Like in the case of the Stephenville, Texas flap that took place, and we talked with him right after that happened. churches down there weren't addressing it at all. And they there were people in those congregations who had seen this mile-wide UFO floating in the skies of Texas. Now, we've been conditioned through popular culture to believe that if aliens exist, then God must not exist. Well, as a pastor, wouldn't you want to disabuse your congregation of that idea? I would think so. But if you never talk about it, how are you going to do that?
Exactly.
So that's where peering into darkness comes from. I mean, we're aimed more at a Christian audience than we are at a secular audience. For that reason, because we just don't see many churches that are talking about
these
topics.
Yeah, we get invitations to go on secular shows, and we just don't do it because we believe our calling is to educate and edify the body.
Mm-hmm.
And those people who do listen to us that aren't Christians, we love you. We love you
so much.
And we love the emails we get from you. And gosh, you know, if we've given you a new look at what a Christian walk is, and it's a favorable one, we thank the Lord for it, because that's, if we have any ministry to the non-believers, it's to show that Christians can be educated, can think rationally and reasonably, and still love the Lord and have a very strong faith.
Right. And that not all of us who profess to be Christians want to, you know, burn all the heretics and non-believers. We actually, I think this is true, at least I hope it's true, reserve most of our frustration for those who claim to be Christians but don't see.
Right.
So.
Well, take a look at this story to get back to this. This is an interesting photograph, and I'm going to read this story later because, like I said, I got it by going to the PID News .com site, and then clicking, if you go to the URL, you can see a little, looks sort of like a little square with lines in it that stands for the RSS feed. Mm-hmm. Just click on that, and you will be able to get to the RSS feed and just see a whole list of the headlines. It's wonderful, and that's what I do when we're doing this show. I just sit and I look at the list.
Yeah.
And for example, some of the... gosh, we've got Abu Dhabi bailed out Dubai again. Can you believe that?
Well, somebody must have told them, look, a lot of Western banks going to lose a lot of money if you don't fork over some bucks.
Yeah, ancient tablets decoded shed light on Assyrian Empire. We were just talking about the Assyrian Empire a few minutes ago. Star Trek gadget to detect cancer.
Yeah.
Lots of really good stories on here. The one that we just talked about the entrance to the underworld possibly being found. Here's one that I posted. It's Prince William to share the Queen's duties. I find this interesting because it looks like they're setting him up. In fact, the very headline, that I didn't create the headline. It was created at the Mail Online in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Calls him the Shadow King.
Hmm. Will I am.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, it's an interesting world in which we live.
It is. And remember, brothers and sisters in Christ, we are behind enemy lines. Even here in the United States, which popular media has told us since birth is a Christian nation. It is not now, nor has it ever been, a Christian nation.
No.
And so we just need to understand that, because the world makes a lot more sense going forward. It doesn't make you really popular on Sunday mornings when you start talking about that.
No, it doesn't. Sadly, it really doesn't. And the one thing that you have to understand when you're speaking about these sort of topics to someone who really is starting at ground zero, not having studied any of this, is to be very gentle, because it's so easy to overwhelm someone, and you will. You'll get the glassy stare. Before we close out for today, I just want to say thanks again to St. Louis Stan for calling in and leaving his wonderful message for us and asking that great question. And if you have a question, you can leave a message. It's our Skype phone number, 317-489-9350, country code 1, 317-489-9350. Mm-hmm. And I also want to say thank you, Rick, who gave us a PayPal donation. And, you know, we don't bring these things up. We don't mention the PayPal stuff because we're trying to solicit more donations. In fact, honestly, we feel guilty every time we get a dollar from anybody.
Yeah.
But it helps to keep us going. And we just want to thank you because, you know, we know everybody's scraping. Everybody's scraping to get by.
Absolutely. I mean, regardless of the fact that certain economic advisors to the president want to declare the recession over, it sure doesn't feel like over, and it probably won't for some time for most of us.
No, it doesn't.
So we do thank you. It is humbling to know that this little weekly exercise in recording the conversations that we often have anyway is well received. And again, we're just thankful for that.
Amen.
And by the way, that 24/7 Skype line just goes right through to voicemail. So wherever you are in the world, don't worry about the time zone because it's not going to disturb us or wake us or anything
exactly.
like that. It just rings straight through to the voicemail. That's the reason it's there.
And we get an email when one comes in, so we know it's there. We know to listen to it before we do the show. And it's a great setup, and we're really grateful for Skype. Let's see. Was there anything else we needed to talk about?
No, you can
be sure to join us on Facebook. Hey, and I am farming on Facebook now.
Yeah.
I know I said last week.
Sharon got roped into Farmville by her sister. And,
I know I said I'd never do it, but my sister, she's been having some health problems, and she promised to take care of that if I would join Farmville, and so I did. And I have to admit that I have been able to curb the addiction. I've not been spending my whole day there. I still get stuff done. I go there two or three times a day, spend about 10 minutes, and it is very relaxing. It's a great stress reliever, and I've had many of you, my Facebook friends, many PID listeners, who have joined me as a neighbor. I've got lots of neighbors.
Yeah, even
Come
my
on,
sister
Derek.
Is.
Yes, I know. Come on, Derek, join us.
Oh,
put your overalls on, honey.
I got them on right now.
You do,
covered
don't you?
Covered with stain. Email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. The interview with Tom Horn is online now, and the interview about the 2012 deception, Chris White, coming up next weekend. So, until
then, you've been talking to great people.
Yes, yes. God has blessed us. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. And living in the past, God can do a new thing now, in a kingdom that will last. He'll make a way across your wilderness, like a river flows in desert land. There's a new day coming, a new day. Coming down.
cutting-edge news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.